Good afternoon, welcome to another edition of Youth Unplugged, brought to you by the Bank of St. Lucia. This afternoon, I'm joined with Miss Monique Colgen. Good afternoon, Monique, how are you?
Hi, good afternoon, I'm doing well, how are you?
I am well, you know, I'm well. It's always good to have someone in a similar field like myself on the show. And this afternoon, Miss Colgen will be speaking to us about the marine environment and, of course, agency that you currently part of, doing some submarine work as well.
Yes.
All right, so I think we'll have a quite interesting show. So, Miss Colgen, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I guess to start off, I'm 27 years old. I'll be 28 this summer. I work with the Department of Fisheries in St. Lucia as a fisheries biologist.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing that for about 3 years now. This year will make 3 years. I studied in the U.S., so I did my associate's in biology first, and then I moved to a four-year school. I was Rutgers University in New Jersey to do my marine science degree. And then I worked in the U.S. for a little bit, and then I came back home in 2019.
Okay, so you're fresh back. It's just about 4 years.
Yeah.
You're back on the soil, and I guess doing what you love. Here in St. Lucia, I always found that marine biology and environmental science was actually one of my favorite areas. I think the natural sciences do have their place, but the applied sciences is literally where it's at. And I think you took that one to an entirely new level. All right, so how was that experience for you heading over to the U.S. and studying there?
It was eye-opening for me. I feel like I became a different person in a sense when I was there, because I was there for about 8 years.
Ooh.
So I had a lot of time to grow, and I left right after secondary school too, so I was a little young when I left, and you know, I kind of grew into myself while over there. But also the studies were very interesting. It was a little confusing for me when I came back, just because since I did my marine science degree in New Jersey, which is a completely different ecosystem than the Caribbean.
Yes.
It was, you know, it was a little bit of getting my footing. But I did get some really good opportunities from my studies, and because of my school, they had an affiliation with the Central Caribbean Marine Institute, which is in Little Cayman. I got to do a study abroad there my last semester, which kind of, you know, helped me transition a
and
bit more
back into the old Caribbean type of energy ecosystem. And so I was actually in New Jersey about a month ago.
Oh, okay,
really
nice.
Not a nice place.
It depends on where you go.
And every time I've gone there, I found that it's been very cloudy, gloomy, you know, very industrial, like, I mean, and with that sort of thing, I mean, the natural ecosystems are very much disrupted to some extent. So it's not somewhere that I would think is very marine friendly, but nonetheless, I mean, you just studied it.
Yeah, I mean, the school I went to has a really great marine science program. Mm-hmm. Rutgers University is the State University of New Jersey in New Brunswick.
Okay.
I mean, yes, it can be very gloomy, like, let's say maybe 8 months out of the year. Right?
It's like the sun does not shine over there.
Yeah, but then, like, from the time maybe May or so hits, you know, you start seeing the sun and you get a little pep, you know. It could just be, you know, getting excited for the summer because you don't have it the rest of the time. But, you know, some summer in New Jersey is nice. I wouldn't put down New Jersey just because, you know, I have friends from there. And I really did enjoy my time there, despite, you know, some other, you know, weather and whatnot.
It's often an experience a lot of people. I mean, people heading out to school, I mean, you're always excited when you first head out, and then you realize, well, you know, school is actually a lot of work, not necessarily just the academic part of it, but I mean, moving into an entirely new environment is always difficult. And I like to ask people what that experience was for them, because I remember what it was for me when I went out to study. I remember when I entered my environmental science, something of a minor at Keyville, they offered, I think, oceanography, one of these courses. And I think you had to be able to swim to do the course. You had to do some diving, and so I couldn't swim. You know, so I couldn't do that course. So it's actually very interesting to see someone here today actually speaking about the marine environment and somebody with an appreciation for the environment like yourself. Yeah. So I'm guessing coming back into St. Lucia in 2019, you would have been a bit shook to see how much sargasm we had on the beach.
Yeah, because I live in Tapio, so we were getting some on the beach by me too, which, I mean, it's kind of inland a little bit. It's not as, you know, so it's the amount we were getting back then was a lot, but I believe, you know, different people like John and Dujon and all of them, they really
Argas, I think, did a great job, and still we have so much
yes.
Actually, last week I was on a beach in Aunt Mamin down in
Soufré,
Jean Mountain, that area, and I was actually surprised to see the guys digging up holes right along the side of the beach to get rid of the sargassum, and they would put it back, and I was like, nah, what you're doing doesn't make any sense, because eventually it'll come back up. Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't make any sense. So we need to find, I think, ways to get rid of that sarcasm some way, somehow. And I think probably this afternoon you could talk to us about some of that. What exactly is your ministry doing to come back to something like sarcasm?
Well, we're working on some plans and whatnot, and we have a couple people who have reached out to us. They want to do research regarding sarcasm and whatnot. The sarcasm issue is a little bit more of my co-worker. He's the lead on that Charlie Prosper. So actually, just yesterday, he was doing sarcasm monitoring around the island. So that's one of the things we do regularly. I think about quarterly or so, we go to select beaches on the island and we monitor how the influx of sarcasm, how much it is, and that helps influence what decisions we might take. In terms of...
Not to cut you off, but people, if you don't know what sargassum is the seaweed that we see.
Yes, the brown seaweed that smells really bad.
You're passing down, you're going down to Viewfort, you're smelling that thing, it's sargassum. Let's use the terms, right? We're not saying seaweed anymore, because there are different types of seaweed. We're saying sargassum, that specific strain. So, Miss Cauldron, you told me that you're going down to the coast every quarter to see and monitor that sargassum. Mm-hmm. So what have your findings... I don't want to get too deep into it, but what have you found over the last few months?
Well, again, my colleague is more in-depth in that one. But yeah, you should. but when we track the influxes, we can kind of see some sort of seasonality to it. So a lot of researchers use that to predict when we're going to have large sargassum influxes and whatnot. And we can use that to inform communities and whatnot. Earlier this year, I believe, or late last year, we had a project where we actually had monitors to monitor the level of the hydrogen sulfide gas which comes off of the sargassum, which is what you're really smelling and what turns your mirrors black and, you know, messes up your TV and all of that stuff.
People don't know that.
Yes, exactly. That's why we were doing the monitors to try to see the levels and gauge, you know, how they're affecting the communities and whatnot. So with that kind of information, you know, we can make better management decisions, and we're also exploring different ways that we can maybe stop the sargassum from coming all the way into shore in certain areas, especially like by the fish landing sites and stuff, where it's really impacted, like if you go down to Miku by the landing sites, you can't, the boats, you know, that's all inside the edges and that sort of thing.
Not a good look, and of course not good for the farmers. The farmers, my bad, the fishermen either.
It makes things a lot harder for them when they have to get out and whatnot. So we are exploring different ways that we can manage that.
But let me just digress and let's go back into exactly why you are here. So what exactly is your role? I mean, you just spoke about your co-worker. What exactly do you do over at the Marine Department?
All of us as fisheries biologists are part of the Marine Resource Management Unit. One of the things, the key things that I focus on is the coral reef ecosystem. So we're working on developing or redeveloping our annual monitoring plan for the coral reefs, so we can monitor the reefs around the island for diseases or any, you know, other temporal changes that might happen over time, like bleaching. And when we had, about two years ago, we had an influx of something called stony coral tissue loss disease. Which is something that affects the stony corals or the reef building corals. So that's when you go in the water and you feel like sometimes it's big rocks that's there. It's not rock, it's coral, it's alive. So don't step on it. So that's something that I help monitor. I also help work with the lobster monitoring for the lobster fishery. So going to the different establishments and doing inspections, seeing closing off their lobster stock for the year when the lobster season ends and things like that. I also work a bit with the marine protected area, so marine managed areas, that's like SUFRE, the SUFRE marine management area. We all do a lot of things in the department.
So you have a lot, probably more than one task for one person inside the department. So I guess that's why you could speak on so many different things. But you mentioned coral bleaching, and I think again, let's use Youth Unplugged today to sensitize the public towards some of these things. I mean, a lot of people are aware that global warming is actually a thing. You know, we are going through a heat wave for something. I mean, a couple of nights now. It's very hot, yes. You know.
And then earlier this year, it was very, very cold.
Yes, I didn't turn on the air conditioning till I think last two weeks since December. I found it was very cold, and then now it's like it has to be on the entire day. So we're gonna get your ACs checked because the summer is heavy.
I'm not looking forward to the heat for the summer.
I'm saying, you know, it's a problem, and we need to get ready for that. People start crying and saying, but since we're in April, we have so much rain. You know, it's hot, but I'm seeing a lot of rain in April. Like, April doesn't rain so much. Town yesterday was a mess, rain all over the place. You know, so we're seeing the changes within the environment. And I think one of these things that we often don't see, at least if we don't dive, is actually coral bleaching. And you made mention to coral bleaching a while ago.
Yes.
Right? So what is coral bleaching?
Okay, so to try not to get too technical.
Tell me about the algae leaving and all that sort. Tell me that.
So essentially, right? We have to go back a little bit towards the biology of coral. So earlier I said, you know, they look like rocks. So yes, there is a part of them that is something of a rock. It's a limestone skeleton that the coral organisms actually make. So the living tissue is the thin layer on the top of the rock, which could be like green, brown, yellow, orange, you know, different colors. And each, if you really look at a piece of coral, it has little cuts in it, like little divots. Each little divot actually houses a little organism called a coral polyp, and they all fuse together to join and create like a colony. They work together and grow and expand. So within the coral polyps now, which is the coral polyp is like the animal part of it, but within the coral polyp there's a cell that's called that's an algae, like a plant, basically called zooxanthellae, which can photosynthesize. It can make food from the sunlight. So coral can eat by both photosynthesizing and also actual feeding. So in coral bleaching now, what happens is when the temperature in the water is too high, the zooxanthellae or the little photosynthetic algae inside of the coral actually leaves the coral.
I'm going to take a line.
Yeah, basically.
Finish that coral. Now it's time to go.
Yes. They leave, and if the temperatures are reduced within a short enough time period, they can come back and recolonize the coral. But when it's too hot for too long, they don't come back, and as much as corals can feed, they do require the photosynthesis to be able to survive long term. So without the zooxanthellae inside, the coral will eventually die.
Yes.
And then, you know, that's not good. Coral is...
That's exactly what I wanted you to get into. I mean, I have an understanding of coral. I've been in biology for a few years. And I think it's actually amazing how coral actually works. And some of the benefits of having a healthy coral reef. I mean, we speak about... having terrible hurricanes and having
Mm-hmm.
Part weather systems, where we get a lot of water coming into the coast, and some people don't even realize coral is one of the reasons why sometimes the water doesn't come into, you know, it breaks the waves down and that sort of thing. And when we lose our coral reefs, we're actually endangering the entire coastal environment. And it's happening. Okay.
So you want me to explain that a little bit? Okay. All right. When we talk about different organisms in the environment, we talk about them having or providing us with ecosystem services. So there can be a number of different types of ecosystem services. One of them would be actual kind of structural protection, which coral do, mangroves do to a certain extent as well, seagrass, all of that. But the way coral work is that the reef actually acts as a barrier, stopping the bigger, it breaks down the bigger waves before they get close to shore, so that when we have things like high sea surge or strong currents from hurricanes or storms or anything like that, it would actually, a healthy, good coral system would actually help to break down the waves so that we don't get as much of it reaching the coast, eroding away sand, and you don't get as much flooding and all of that.
Yes.
So that's why we should be taking care, especially as Caribbean nations, which could be potentially impacted by sea level rise in the next couple decades.
I don't want to say potentially. I want to say will be affected. Especially we are being affected.
Yes.
Especially people in Denver. We will know a lot about that. Mm-hmm. The people who build houses right next to the sea. I never know how these things happen. These things pass planning. What are we doing in there? I'm saying it. I mean, this is the show, this is a talk show.
Yeah.
I'm saying my opinion. But I think some of these things really gonna be a problem in the next year.
I think it's sometimes a case of not thinking ahead or not having the information to think far enough ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people just genuinely don't know, but the people who do know should guide
100%. Okay, we're gonna get back into coral and all that, but I had to talk about Waterways Young Professionals, right? This is a board or a group that you are currently part of. So I want you to tell me a little bit about what Waterways does. Let's try to recruit some people for Waterways.
Yes, that would be great. So Waterways started off as the Caribbean Sea and SEA Student Environmental Alliance. So Waterways was founded by Mary Beth Sutton. She's a resident of the United States, but she started working with the community of Margo. About 19th anniversary sometime this week. She was working with the kids there doing a summer camp and basically encouraging them to be more environmentally friendly, especially we know in Margo there are some issues with water quality and whatnot.
You've been telling me something here because I actually remember as a child going to Margo Bay, the beach, and that was a beach I didn't like to go to at all.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of seaweed.
The seaweed likes quote unquote dirty water, you know.
And that beach would have the most seaweed before all of this global warming talk and the talk of sarcasm coming in. Margo Beach? Anyone correct me? Full of seaweed. Or if you go to certain beaches and you get infections a lot.
It's sometimes water quality issues.
Everything is blaming Marico Beach. What do you say? You know, when they go to Vigi Beach, that doesn't happen. That's a better beach.
But yes, so she started working with the community members in Margo, especially the kids, and then it developed into, she actually created another NGO in the US, in Tennessee, where she's from, which was a partner group to that. So that was Tennessee. So Caribbean Sea and Tennessee. And then, what was it, about three, four years ago, we rebranded to Waterways. Which is an umbrella name for both organizations, but then we have Waterways Caribbean, which not only operates in St. Lucia, but I believe they also work in St. Vincent, they've done work in Dominica, they're trying to restart work in Belize. But again, it's the same thing working with kids, doing summer camps, working in the schools. A lot of the schools have environmental clubs, so they go visit the schools and talk to the kids. Waterways has actually worked, partnered with Heineken St. Lucia to adopt the Shock River. So they're going to be doing some cleanups and, you know, awareness raising about the importance of that river basin and, you know, how to keep it healthy and whatnot. And then now we have the Young Professionals Group of Waterways, which we've recently, just recently, it hasn't been fully rolled out yet, but we're changing the name to just Friends of Caribbean Waterways. That group now acts as something of a graduation step for the kids from the regular waterways programs, and they age out of that. The idea was for them to join Friends of Waterways to basically help support waterways, do fundraising activities, also do educational and outreach things, so helping waterways with the school programs, with the summer camps, you know, basically things like that.
I actually love to see agencies coming into the Caribbean, doing a bit of work. I mean, not only the Caribbean, but small island developing states. As SIDSs, we have a lot of, issues. And the environment is not really impacted by us. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about global warming and carbon emissions and all that sort of thing. And we know that the Caribbean, not a significant contributor. Let's put Trinidad in there. Trinidad has about 1 million cars on the road, 1 million plus cars on the road. So let's just say the Caribbean excluding Trinidad. And just put that there. Right? We have small but growing populations. And I think that with limited resources, we actually need some of that help. You know, people coming in and doing a bit of work here and there. And of course, bringing awareness. Because, can we say that? Again, let me put the ministry on the spot. Is the ministry doing enough to bring awareness out there? I don't think so.
I definitely think we can always do more.
Yes.
We can always do more. I think. In some cases it's a situation where it's just everybody's doing so much that sometimes little things like that slip you.
It slips, you know?
You're thinking about what you think is the more important thing, but awareness is important. The kids need to know what's going on because oftentimes you can tell an adult something 10,000 times, and they will not pay you any attention. But you tell the children that, and the children go home and say, "Mommy, why are you littering?"
I mean, it's a thing. And I actually read through a syllabus last night. I was reading through a social studies syllabus, and the last time we reviewed the social studies syllabus was in 2009 as a CXC social studies syllabus. It speaks to sustainable development, but there are certain things, right? I mean, it's not part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably part of a hidden curriculum as a teacher. I mean, you see things, you know, probably a teacher comes in and says, "Oh, well, we're going for global warming." That's probably not within the syllabus. I can't remember if it's there or not. But there are some things that I think that we still need to bring to the forefront. I mean,
mm-hmm.
children should know these things. Probably the ministry goes into a secondary school or so ever so often, you know, have a conversation about these things because it is our reality to know. Because not everyone does science subjects. You know, not everyone will go to school. There's no environmental science at CXC. You know, so where are you going to learn all these things? If not, probably through the right channels, the internet, the TikToks, the Facebook, you know, the radio to some extent. We're talking about it this afternoon. I'm sure the listeners could see that they'll actually learn something today. Probably they leave you the word sagaza, which makes sounds better than seaweed.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. You know, so first of all, I want to say big shout-outs to Waterways for doing what they're currently doing. I mean, I'd love to come and help you clean the...
I need my boots.
I need my boots. I'll probably come. I can't do too much heavy lifting. I'll come and
if the
see.
Children can do it, you can do it.
Right? You know, so I mean, what's next for you? What's the end goal? What you looking forward to, you know, to bring to the forefront here in St. Lucia?
Well, again, on the topic of education, that's something that I'm actually really passionate about. I started swim lessons, teaching swim lessons when I was away at school as a way to make money. And I realized I actually really enjoy working with kids. So I would like to keep doing that. I've been doing here and there, just doing a little swim lessons with my friends and whatnot. But ideally, I would really like to be able to work more with the kids, not only with the swim lessons, but also with scuba diving. I recently got certified as a dive master, and I'm hoping to soon. I'm hoping to soon get certified as an instructor so that I can actually teach scuba diving. And not only teach scuba diving, but also pair that with the marine education so that you're not only learning to dive or how to swim, but you're also learning about the environment around you and learning how to appreciate that more and, you know, stewardship and taking care of the environment around you.
All of these nice things. So if you're party bottle here, you're diving and all that sort of thing. Monique, I just want to say, because we really we just ran out of time.
Now.
Yeah, the time was running. I mean, we speak about sustainable development goals. We have a lot of them. You know, we need to try to achieve some of those. And I think some of let me not say easier ones, because I think one of them are attainable. You understand? But we have some work to do. And with regards to sustainable development, using our natural resources properly, and even, you know, recycling all these sort of things, I think you'll help us in that light, right?
I hope so.
Of course. Right there in the marine department. Is there anything we probably didn't touch on, like probably highlight just before we wrap up?
I just wanted to say, I know there are some people who want to do marine science in some capacity, and they just... Some people don't know anybody else who's done it, or, you know, they don't see it as something that's attainable for them. I am open to have discussions with people, to talk to people about how they can go about doing it, what they can use the marine science for, because not everybody would be a biologist and work in the government. I have a lot of friends I've met over the years who work in non-governmental agencies doing conservation in different forms, you know. So if anybody ever wants to reach out to me to speak to me, you can. My Instagram is probably the easiest way to do it.
Give us we'll take it.
Mermaid758, because my name is Monique.
So
Mermaid, like mermaid, but Mermaid. So Mermaide 758 on Instagram, also on Twitter, but I'm a little bit more active on my Instagram. So yeah, if anybody has anything, you're curious about something, your kids are curious about something, reach out to me, and I'm also available at the Department of Fisheries. If you reach out to them, they can put me in contact.
I think we need to be making some advances to the Ministry of Fisheries, because I actually don't know they're building it. So where is the...
We're right there by the fisheries complex. A lot of people, when I say I work at fisheries, they think I mean at the fisheries complex. But no,
it's
the blue building at the back. Yeah, yes, it's between Lucilec and the financial center.
I know exactly where. You have that big car park.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming in again today, Monique. Of course, this is Youth Unplugged, brought to you by the Bank of St. Lucia. That's all the bank you need, Monique. If you didn't know that, now you know. That's all the bank you need. My name is Khaled Fidel. I will see you guys again next week for another edition of Youth Unplugged.